Hi, and welcome to Zed Games. Recorded live at 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and broadcast nationally over the Community Radio Network, Zed Games brings you the latest gaming news, reviews, and interviews from across Australia and around the world.
Listeners, welcome once again to another exciting episode of Zed Games, Australia's most beloved and your most beloved, no doubt, gaming radio program, coming to you live from the 4ZZZ Studios in Brisbane and heard around the nation on the Community Radio Network. I am Lee, and joining me in the studio for this episode, of course, Razor.
Hey.
He's the only one who's in here, actually.
Yes.
It's just you and me. Where is everyone else?
Away?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, oh, it's fine.
Actually, you weren't even here for a second because I turned your mic on late.
Oh, what?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
What did we miss?
Just the important stuff at the beginning, like...
Awful.
The name of the program.
Oh, God.
Which is Zed Games.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
That's great. So what is happening on this episode of Zed Games, you idiot?
Well, we have a couple of guests coming in to join us later on. Nick and Tim from Earthwork Games. Mm-hmm. They're about to put out a game called Forts later this year. So we'll be talking all about that.
We got to play that, didn't we?
We did.
That was fun.
A lot of fun. Yeah.
Yes.
And Lee, you have been playing The Swindle?
I have been playing The Swindle.
Some kind of steampunk cybercrime caper game?
Yes, that is a pretty apt description. You attempt to steal things with a steam-powered vacuum cleaner on your back. And it is fun and hard, and robots will hit you on the head.
But we also have some gaming news to get through.
Mm-hmm.
A lot happening this week. First of all, Peter Dinklage has been replaced by Nolan North as the voice of Ghost in the interplanetary shooter Destiny. North, best known as the voice of Nathan Drake in Uncharted, has re-recorded all of Dinklage's lines and will also voice Ghost in future content, beginning with the Taken King expansion to be released this September.
This is the most video games thing to ever happen. Just the north washing of a game that has already had some voice work recorded. So Nolan North, listeners, is the voice of every video game protagonist ever. Who is he?
Right? He's Nathan Drake, as we said before. He's every leading man in every Call of Duty.
Yep. He's Booker DeWitt in Bioshock Infinite. He's... everyone that Troy Baker isn't, basically.
Yes.
If anyone's like, if you're like, boy, that's a cocky sounding handsome man, then it's either Nolan North or Troy Baker, and it's probably Nolan North.
Yes.
So the robot, the nerdy robot in Destiny, is now going to sound like a cocky handsome man. And as someone who doesn't play Destiny, I couldn't be happier. I don't know. How do you feel about this?
I don't play Destiny either, but I hear that some people are.
You did, though.
Yeah. I did play Destiny. And one of the things that struck me was Peter Dinklage, who is an Emmy Award winner, by the way.
Yeah.
His performance was very bland.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a robot.
Yeah.
But even by robotic standards, he was very bland. He just sounded like he didn't want to be there. Like, so very disinterested.
No direction, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair on him,
yep,
the script was atrocious. Mm-hmm. And I believe there was some attention on that when the beta first released.
Mm.
Like, terrible lines.
We're talking about the "this wizard came from the moon"
yeah,
line.
So with what he had, maybe he just couldn't find it in him to bring, you know, his thing to the table there.
All right. Well, good luck, Nolan. What else is happening? So World of Warcraft subscription numbers are at their lowest since 2005. Activision Blizzard's financial report reveals that there were 5.6 million subscribers at the end of the financial year. This represents a significant drop, down from 10 million since the expansion Warlords of Draenor was released last November. That is quite a drop, and yet still that dwarfs the numbers of most MMOs.
Yeah, it would still be the first most popular MMO, right? Even with 5 million?
In the Western world, potentially. Yeah, that must be a bit of a sting. The Ferrari budget has probably been scrapped or shortened.
Well, if you multiply 5.6 million by $15,
yeah,
that's how much money they're making a month. So You know, it's hard to feel sorry for them.
Apparently, Blizzard are going to be announcing in the next week a new expansion, and their numbers tend to dip and raise between expansions. So.
Yeah. It just seems like the pit is becoming deeper
each time.
Each year, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's going to keep happening. But they're millionaires, so who cares?
A report by Japanese financial publication Nikkei has made serious allegations of an almost Orwellian corporate culture at Metal Gear Solid studio Konami. The allegations include the following. Security cameras installed throughout the building are not used for security, but rather for the continuous monitoring of employee activity with a time card system for those who leave the office during a lunch break. Employees who take too long are named and shamed at company meetings. Most staff have computers that cannot be connected to the internet, but are only able to communicate internally. Staff email addresses, aside from those in the PR department, consist of random number strings and are periodically swapped between employees to prevent headhunting. And developers who underperform are reassigned to unskilled positions in the security department or working on a factory assembly line. And that also includes like high-level producers as well, not just junior employees like you would imagine.
I've heard that also includes like cleaning roles as well. Mm.
This report follows an apparent breakdown in the relationship between the company and Metal Gear Solid producer Hideo Kojima, who is currently working on Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain, currently scheduled for release in September. The report suggested that ballooning development costs were responsible for the rift. It was also revealed that Kojima Productions has been renamed Number 8 Production Department. Konami are yet to provide a comment on the report.
That is quite disheartening. They used to make really good games until very recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Konami, that logo used to be the seal of quality.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's a shame. It also sheds some light on the relationship between Kojima and the company. It seems like Kojima is obviously an artist who doesn't want to compromise his vision. He doesn't want to let pesky things like time or money get in the way of you know, making his thing. Whereas Konami are a company who are shrinking and you know, trying to downsize and get things done as efficiently as possible. So it looks like those two ideologies have finally clashed.
Yep.
Which makes a lot of sense now.
Yeah, I did see a thing recently. Konami have released a trailer for their latest project, which is a spin-off on the Castlevania franchise. That long-running, beloved gaming franchise is going to have a new number as an erotic-themed pachinko machine. So a one-armed bandit, but with tiny pinballs inside.
Oh boy.
But with erotic vampires in it now.
Okay.
So they've fallen somewhat in their
I admit the erotic vampires thing maybe perked my ears up a little bit, but no, it's sad.
Sony will soon allow PS Plus to subscribers to vote for the games that they would like to see added to the Instant Game Collection. The feature, called Vote to Play, will allow subscribers to vote for one of three games that they would like to see added to the service. Vote to Play won't be available every month and will initially be limited to games from the PlayStation 4 catalog. A leaked video suggests that the first month's choices will be Grow Home, Armello, and Zombie Vikings. This is a really interesting direction for them to take.
It's really cool.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of PS Plus. Every month, bunch of new games.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a cool little collection of random stuff that you wouldn't normally pick up. Mm. So I found myself finding little gems here and there that I wouldn't have looked at twice at before.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, if anything, the fact that you get to vote on them might change that dynamic, though. Like, if you know that you're getting a game that you voted for, that you're excited for, maybe you'll only play that one rather than the weirdos that they've just been throwing out there any time.
Yeah.
But it is a magnificent service if you are a subscriber of PS Plus with a handful of dollars that you get every month and you just get new games for free. I like it.
Yeah.
Mm.
And finally, the Game On GO423 Symposium is happening this weekend. This year's theme is What If? The symposium will feature 2 days of industry guest speakers, panels, discussions, workshops, an open mic session, and most importantly, the opportunity to test and play locally developed games. The event is this weekend, 8th to 9th of August, at The Cube, which is Science and Engineering Center at QUT Gardens Point Campus. It's free, and you can register at igdabrisbane.org/go423.
You have left out the what is actually the most important thing about the Game On Symposium.
What's that?
Which is that we will be DJing there on the Saturday in the afternoon.
Yes, during the social thing.
Yeah. So, you know, you get to hear our fat beats again, like twice in 1 week. What a gift.
Yeah, that's great. So if you're a budding game designer, and we know that there's a bunch of you listening to the show, this is a great way to get that networking stuff done.
Mm.
You know, because everyone's there. Bring your business card, bring your game on a tablet, bring a picture that you've made.
That's good too. There'll be the program for this year is actually amazing. Presentations from a lot of people that we have been lucky enough to speak to over the course of the last couple of years will be talking about their areas of expertise, and there'll be some workshops on the Sunday which look amazing and are possibly all filled out. But the Sunday also has the demonstrations of all the indie games as well, and that is a fantastic place to see what the talent of Brisbane are secretly up to.
Yep. So not just if you're a game developer, but if you want to keep your finger on the pulse what's happening in the games development community in Brisbane, or if you just want to check out some sweet games that haven't been released yet, Game On Symposium this weekend. MC Frontalot there with Secrets from the Future. You're listening to Zed Games. My name's Razor, and I'm joined by Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Our next guests are from Earthwork Games, Nick.
Hi.
And Tim.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you in the studio, guys.
Thanks for having us.
It's great
now,
to be here.
You're working on a game called Forts. Lee and I had the pleasure of playing it last weekend. You invited us into your little loft for a friendly couple of matches.
That didn't sound sus at all. That's fine. Yes, we played Forts. It was really great. It's Forts flinging heavy artillery at each other whilst also desperately trying to reconstruct based on the terrifying damage you're inflicting, right?
Yes.
And you blew up my sandcastle, man.
I did.
A lot.
A lot of fun.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about Forts in a minute, but can we talk about Earthwork Games, your company, and it's just the two of you, right?
That's right.
How did you get started with that?
Tim has been working on Forts for quite a few years now. He approached me in 2008 to help him out with the art side of things. He'd been working on it for quite a long time. When did you start working on it?
Well, the first record of anything was in 2003, actually. So this project has been going for about 12 years on and off. It's finally coming to a head, and we're almost ready to release it to the world.
And how did you guys meet up? Did you just find each other in the industry, or were you housemates, crime fighting duo, something exciting like that?
Did you hit him with a car, Tim?
Nothing so exciting, I'm afraid. No, we worked together at Sega Studios.
Yeah, that was back in, that has been like 2007, I think. So when you
I moved to Brisbane in 2007 from Adelaide, and worked for Sega for a few years, and we formed a friendship there, and it blossomed into what you see now.
Okay, so let's talk about Forts. Now it's on Steam Greenlight.
That's right.
So people can vote for it to enter the Steam storefront.
Yep.
How is that campaign going so far?
It's going really well, actually. A couple of weeks ago we put it up there. Day before we sort of shouted out from the rooftops across social media that we've been working on, and it's been going really strongly. It's sitting at number 7 on the Steam Greenlight page, about 1,400 different games, and we've got past 5,000 votes.
Close to 6,000 now,
right? Ooh. Close to 6,000 now. So yeah, it's been going really well, and had a lot of support from a couple of indie websites, that sort of thing, and across Twitter, Facebook, and our own website.
Mm.
Yeah, we put together a little trailer and had some help from Jeff Van Dyke with the music and sound effects, so big thanks to him.
Jeff has provided the music and sound effects for probably like 80% of the indie games in Australia.
He sounds like the Nolan North of the Aussie audio industry.
Yeah, he's hitting that point.
Yeah. There was also a bit of help from another guy, Richie Vaughan, who used to work with us along with Jeff down at Sega back in the good old days.
Mm. So why don't we back up a bit? Tim, why don't you explain your game to our listeners in your own words? You can probably do it more justice than I did.
Okay, it's a game about building your own fort, putting guns on it, and then shooting the hell out of your opponent's fort, basically.
That's basically it, yes. That's very good. Succinct.
Yes. But there are a few games like that, but what sets ours apart is that the forts are physically modelled, so you can build them as tall as you like, but if they don't stand up, they will come crashing down. And all the while, your enemy is trying to peg your fort, break it at the base, and have it collapse. So it's a bit like Angry Birds and Worms at the same time.
Hmm.
Yeah, I really like the way that the forts are bound by the laws of physics. Like, if you have it too heavy at the back, it'll start to teeter, and you know, if you break an integral structure, it'll sort of wobble and stuff like that. And you can use ropes to secure it to the ground to prevent swaying.
That's right.
I'm really impressed by the ropes. When we were playing on the weekend, Nick and I we probably should have died a lot sooner if not for the fact that
yes.
I'd kind of accidentally moored the back of our fort on a wall behind us.
That was an accident, but a happy accident.
Yes.
I don't know if it was good, actually, because we did prolong our death. If we'd have died sooner, we could go on to another game, which we might have won.
Possibly.
But I'll remember that tactic for a future game.
Yeah. Rope everything together.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of to sort of get to grips with them. You know, it sort of takes you back to old physics lessons at school and stuff, and triangles, and, you know, building up your structure and making it stronger at the bottom as opposed to the top, because the weight has a huge bearing on it, and we've got, you know, indicators on there like struts going red and then flashing if there's too much weight. And there's definitely occasions where you are your own worst enemy, and instead of getting your fort knocked over by the enemy, it literally built it incorrectly and it collapses on you. So you've got to watch out for those sort of things.
It's really satisfying seeing the forts collapse in that kind of Angry Birds way where, you know, everything topples down like you'd expect it to. But it surprised me that you said that you'd had this game, like, in mind since 2003. The Angry Birds thing, was that a later development that you added in, or did you sort of predate that game and you could have made Angry Birds and been rich instead of them?
No,
it predates a lot of games, actually. You know, 12 years is a long time. But the game you see today is pretty much true to the original concept. The original theme was more sort of medieval siege warfare sort of thing, but I think Nick convinced me that a sort of modern take on it with lasers and guided missiles would be a bit more exciting. And sure enough, it's quite a lot of fun.
Yeah, it definitely makes for a good trailer. When I first came on board and Tim showed me, he'd got some like rudimentary sort of 3D models in there and stuff, and me being a 2D artist, I was like, I can't be dealing with this 3D malarkey. If I'm going to do it so fun, I'm going to make it two-dimensional. And games like Metal Slug were a particular inspiration for me. Mm. Sort of make it a bit more, you know, modern day sort of thing, and I think it's worked out the best, because you got a lot of, if it was medieval, I imagine it'd just be like, you know, trebuchets and ballistas and that sort of thing, all sort of fairly straightforward, whereas in this you got, you know, obviously cannons and mortars, it's obviously ballistic, but then you got lasers, which are direct fire, and then also guided missiles, which have to use a sniper with a you know, laser sight to mark the target. So there's a little bit more going on in there than sort of direct fire.
A lot more scope for explosions as well.
Oh, well, that's also true. Yeah, everybody loves explosions. Realistic physics and explosions combined, and then when you destroy the nuclear reactor, which is the end game, then you get a nuclear explosion, a mushroom cloud. So yeah, we wouldn't have had that if it was a castle.
No, very few nuclear reactors back then.
Yeah,
if any.
Yeah, well, yeah, I haven't heard of any.
Yep.
Perhaps we should mention that this is a network multiplayer game. Mm. So you can play it over the internet or a local area network. So we're not on the same screen. We're playing separately and attacking each other. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, it's PC.
That's important.
At the moment, yes, definitely. You know, a few times on Steam Greenlight page, we've had about 300 comments so far, and there's been some quite amusing ones. But the reason I say that is because some people are like, oh, it looks like it's a Flash game, or it looks like it's on tablets, or that sort of thing, when it most definitely isn't. Basically, it's physics-based, but it's also like a strategy game. You've got your tech tree and stuff, and your resource collection, that sort of thing. And because of the building and stuff, there's quite a lot of actions per minute as well, so it's quite intense.
Yeah, yeah.
You need a mouse. Yeah.
It really does play like a quite intense real-time strategy game if you're playing against someone who knows what they're doing, like you guys were. Mm. So I assumed, based on looking at it, that it would be kind of a more leisurely sort of Worms-like experience, and was trounced. No, you really have to stay on top of everything at all times, which makes for a unique and exciting experience.
Yeah.
Though.
And when I first started playing it against Tim, obviously Tim's been playing it for centuries before, and so he's quite good. And he forgets how everything's sort of second nature to him. And I was like getting smashed. To the point where I'd be thinking, maybe we should make this turn-based, I was quite adamant about that for a while, but I'm definitely glad that saw the sense in having it real-time, because it's a lot more fun.
Yeah,
yeah, and it definitely helps to differentiate it from other games in the genre, like Worms, Scorched Earth, and even Angry Birds as well, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true. So you can definitely class it as, an RTS as well. Whereas if it was turn-based, you wouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah, and just like an RTS, you start with a very bare-bones structure, and you have to put in, a resource-gathering units to help you get your energy and minerals up, and then you have to spend them to get, little upgrade points and little various factories to increase your thing, and then only then, once you get your energy and minerals up, can you get the big weapons happening, the big missiles and the lasers. So there's you're always chipping away at something. It's not like you can just mount your best weapon straight away. So.
Yeah, that's the tech tree sort of evolved. How long ago? It must have been is it 18 months or
about that,
something like that. Because originally we had it so that basically if you had enough resources, you could build anything.
Hmm.
And we decided to sort of make it so that the player had to make a decision. In which direction they wanted to go. Do they want missiles? Do they want lasers? That sort of thing. And so, therefore, we came up with the tech tree where you build certain buildings in certain order in order to get certain equipment. So it's a bit of a sort of, as in RTSs, you're wondering if the other player's going to be doing like a tank rush or whatever, or they're stockpiling their weapons. This is a similar kind of thing. Is someone going to come at you with a laser, in which you're going to need a laser shield to deflect it, or they can come out with missiles, in which you need a machine gun to shoot them out of the air. So it's a bit more strategy.
Yeah, you can't actually see inside the enemy fort. If they happen to build a weapon on top of the fort, then you can see it. But there are sort of internal rooms that remain hidden, so the enemy fort could be hiding a big cannon and you wouldn't know until they fired it upon you.
Mm. Yeah, that's one of the things that I found really interesting about it, is just the frequency of player choice that comes up, that even when it comes to whether you focus on building up your structure so that you can support more artillery, or just manning the artillery to pepper away and keep your opponent from being able to do anything. I liked that. I got hamstrung at that point because I just wanted to keep firing mortars at Ray. And the minute that I realized that wasn't going to win the game for me, and then I attempted to start building up so I could really, knock him to pieces with a laser or a cannon, that was the time that he was able to switch up and knock my stuff to pieces, because he's a jerk.
I thought he was very admirable how he didn't get sort of concerned that he was losing. He just calmly plodded on, and just he's a bit sort of like the tortoise and the hare, and you were rushing ahead and smashing him early on, and Ray sort of just slowly rebuilt a bigger weapon and then hammered you.
He's a jerk like that.
Yeah.
Indeed. It speaks volumes about the game balance as well. I mean, I imagine once you realize that it was actually a quite intense strategy game, the end game balance becomes a big issue that you have to deal with, like making sure the weapons are equally powerful in different ways, etc.
Yeah, it's a excuse the pun, but it's a real battle, you know. keeping everything you know, powerful enough to be exciting, but not too powerful to easily end the game. And then you've got to balance the cost of it against how long it takes to build and reload. And, you know, we just take a best stab at it and then fine-tune it after that. And I think we've done reasonably well, but the community is going to tell us once we get it out into early access.
Once people start smashing, like, the rush strategies, I guess?
Yeah, well, you know... because of the combination of physics and a complex RTS, there's certainly scope for exploits, and we're really interested in finding those and fixing those if we can.
You're listening to Zed Games with Razor and Lee. That was Chipzel with Formed in the Cloud. Now we are joined by Nick and Tim from Earthwork Games. We're talking about their tremendous game Forts, which is not out yet. Sorry, but it will be out soon-ish. Ray and I got to visit your studio. We played a bit on the weekend, and we got to experience the joy of co-op and co-op fort construction. Tim, that seems like a nightmare as a thing to implement. How did you even decide to tackle that?
I can't remember the decision, honestly, but yeah, I've worn it for a long time now. It is very difficult. I mean, any developer can tell you that network multiplayer is very difficult, but I've decided to add the ability for different players to cooperate on the same fort together. They can build at the same time, they can shoot weapons at the same time, and they share the same resource pool. So there's all sorts of scope for people stepping on each other's toes. But
why are you looking at me, Nick?
Just thinking back to Sunday.
Right.
Certain incidents in which we were cohabiting.
We were doing fine for so much of those games.
Yes, for most of the game, apart from the end where we lost, and other times where someone was a little bit preoccupied with watching the reload counter go down.
Someone has to shoot the guns, and it was me in this case.
And
what were
else,
you doing?
I was repairing the precipice that you're about to fall into.
Wow.
You were so one-minded.
Look,
you neglected to notice that there was a huge gap underneath you.
This just speaks to the fact that the game is so immersive. I was completely lost in the role of firing the mortars that I neglected to notice the fact that the entire structure underneath me was on fire.
I think you just fixated on that reload icon, and the fact that the mortars fired was just a byproduct of getting to see that again.
Oh, well, look, I mean, whose fault is that then? You drew it.
Well, okay. It's... shouldn't have drawn it so mesmerizingly.
Yes. So, listeners, as you can tell, the co-op experience allows for people to air all sorts of grievances or discover new ones.
It's always it's a good game when friends walk out as enemies.
This is true. This is true.
And it sounds messy, you know, two people working on the same fort, but as you start working together and sort of assign yourself different responsibilities, it's actually quite cool, isn't it? Like you said, one person could be the weapon guy just hammering away. The other person can deal with all of the other real work, like repairing the fort and all the structural stuff.
That's the division that I assumed we had.
The division of labor.
Yeah.
Is there also a mode to have four players with discrete forts and they're all in the same map or not?
Currently, there are only two teams, plus a neutral team of any structures that are unattached. There are no... You can't have your own fort as such. You're only part of a team, and you can manage any of the resources of that team. But there can be multiple reactors. So the reactor is the heart of your fort. Once that explodes, it's pretty much game over. But you could have separate forts on the same side, and you could divide the labor by forts in that way. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, just as an aside, I have to say, it was a lot of fun being in the LAN environment.
Yeah.
These days, a lot of the multiplayer gaming is done online. You know, you're sort of in your living room or in your computer room or whatever.
And in your cocoon.
And it's all dark and your eyes are all square and you're playing against people, but it's not like you're in the same room with buddies yelling at each other.
Yeah.
That was something that I really enjoyed.
Yeah, that was definitely... you guys must have been getting on... you guys are winning, so that obviously helped. But there seems to be less sort of war stories from your side of things and more from mine and Lee's side of things. One thing about the co-op aspect of it is it's really useful to sort of introduce people to the game who haven't played it before. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, you know, when we were playing, me and Tim, I don't know what it's like on your team, but when I was playing with Lee, I would be doing the building and stuff like that, and he was responsible for the shooting. And so, obviously, the shooting part is the bit which is the most attractive and the most fun to start off with. So I think it's a good sort of way of introducing players to the game rather than dropping them in the deep end. What do I do? What do I do?
Cool. And speaking of introducing players to the game, you guys have trailers and various resources online?
Yeah, that's right. We've got a website, earthworkgames.com. And on the front page of that is a trailer on there, as well as a link to the Greenlight page where anyone who's got a Steam membership can vote our game up, which would be really nice.
Please vote this game up. I really want to play this game.
Yes. So the more, the better. And we also got a Twitter handle at Earthwork Games, so you can follow our deeds on there.
So if our listeners are actually interested in seeing the game, you will be demoing it this weekend at the Game On Symposium, right?
This is correct. Yep. What? On Sunday, I think it goes from 10 until 4 at the Cube QUT.
Right, so what can our listeners expect to see? You there, obviously.
We will be there.
Mm. Yeah, we'll be running at least two networked PCs to play the game. You know, two people can play against each other. We also have single-player missions and tutorials, so if people want to experiment on their own, that's fine.
Yeah, we were the same thing with last year's version of the game, and it went really well. It was really useful to get feedback and see how people responded to it, and you got different sorts of players. Some people sort of was a bit quiet and stuff, they just quite happily just sit there and seeing how the game works and slowly plodding along, building their little structures up quite methodically, and other players would be standing at the back while battle's going on and watch a couple of games and then sort of absorb what was happening and then just jump straight on there and seem real naturals at it. Mm.
Ducks to water.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It must be good to see players playing the game and how they react and the strategies they employ.
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking forward to seeing how creative people can be with this concept. It's perhaps to give a more visual cue, it looks a lot like World of Goo, but with weapons. So, a lot of sort of triangles and bits of pieces attached to the fort. So we're really looking forward to it, releasing it.
Guys, thank you very much for coming along today.
Thank you very much.
Best of luck with Forts.
Yeah,
I
just
does well.
Like to say thanks to Salt House Co-working Space in New Farm for letting us use their studio space on Sunday.
Guys, thanks once again for coming along.
You're welcome. Thank
it's
you
our
very
pleasure.
Much.
Thank you.
We just heard Phantom NK with Minimal, and before that, MC Chris. MC Chris owns Paper Planes. You're listening to Zed Games on Triple Z, 102.1 FM. Lee, you have been playing a game called The Swindle.
Yeah.
I described it earlier as a steampunk cybercrime caper.
That's yes. Basically it, yes. It's a heist game. It's a platforming heist game, in fact, by Size 5 Games. It's a company that has made a bunch of weird stuff before this. They put out a couple of wonderful and filthy and hilarious adventure games, point-and-click adventure games. There was one called Ben There, Dan That, and then Time, Gentlemen, Please. After that, they did a game called... what was it? There was one with Gun Monkeys, I believe that was one. And they also did a game that they won a BAFTA for that was a sex health game for the BBC where you were a bunch of condom-hatted marines running around inside people's orifices fighting STDs. So this is a departure.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like we should just drop the swindle and talk about the condom game.
Yeah. We can come back to that later, perhaps. But the swindle is a game where you are a thief or a guild of thieves, really, in a Zeppelin. You are in steampunk London, and Scotland Yard in 100 days are going to be unleashing their high-tech, Big Brother-like security system that will make all crime impossible. And so you have to spend your 100 days performing a series of heists, stealing enough loot, and upgrading your skills to the point where you can then break into Scotland Yard and steal this the security device to ensure that your life as a criminal continues uninterrupted. There are a number of twists, though. The game is very, very hard, and so your life as a thief is constantly interrupted by the death of your thieves out in the field, which then will set you back a day. It's a bit mean like that. It's a bit like a bit of a roguelike in that fashion.
Yeah.
A bit spelunky-ish. So that's the gist of it.
Yeah. So when you respawn,
yep,
and you have to start the whole thing again, is it randomized? Is the castle the same every time?
Well, what happens is that when your guy dies, you get a new thief. You just lose a day. You lose whatever money your guy had, whatever experience they had, and then you have to go on a new heist, which will be in a new randomized location. And the locations vary from... You start off in the slums and you work your way towards the warehouse district and then the kind of nice house district and then the swanky places and then the, you know, the banks and then finally Scotland Yard. You can't unlock them until you've paid an exorbitant fee to upgrade your security hacking skills. So, yeah, you only get set back a little bit with each death, but also the fact that you only have 100 days to get to the point where you can steal this thing means that every death is potentially going to be snatching that victory away from you at the very end.
Okay, and with every thief that is reborn,
yep,
at the start of the previous day, is there new abilities every time, or is it the same thief?
They have a different name and they have a different appearance, but they have the same abilities that you had unlocked with the previous one, but their experience is reset. So your experience as your thief manages a string of successful heists. It increases the bonus to the loot that you snatch. So, of course, you want to keep sending your guy out and you want to get a string of successes so that your experience bonus grows and grows and grows. But, yep, of course, that means you start getting greedy. As soon as you get greedy in this game, it punishes you.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Rogue Legacy.
Yeah.
Did you ever play that game?
Yes.
Yeah, similar kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that had a similar sort of spelunky-like, rogue-like thing going on. I think the elements of that are definitely in this thing's DNA. It is a 2D platformer at its heart, but it's also a stealth game, so you will be breaking into windows and... picking door locks and watching the security robots and working out their path and smacking them on the head. The designer Dan Marshall describes himself as someone who is a fan of the idea of stealth games, who finds them a little bit tedious, doesn't really like, you know, sitting in a box and waiting till you've memorized someone's pattern so that you can then go out and, you know, hold the X button until you've choked them out. And so this is a game that does away with all of that stuff. You can see the patrol patterns, they're very obvious. You can see the line of sight because it's a robot, so it's sending out a beam of light. It is a very responsive and quick stealth game, which is a really fun thing to have to get to grips with. It's quite bombastic. Very early on, you unlock the ability to take bombs along with you. And at first, I wasn't really sure what the purpose of these was, but now I know. Bombs are used to create entrances that weren't there before. So you can quite easily climb onto the roof of most buildings, and all you've got to do is blow a hole in the top, and maybe you've bypassed a lot of security that was, you know, towards the doors, so that you can get to the juicy computer vaults inside.
That sounds like it would have been quite a revelation for you when you were playing.
Yeah.
Yeah?
It was great. Yeah, especially realizing that, like, when a roof blows up and collapses, it can take out the hovering security robots and the cameras that are, you know, attached nearby. Bombs are fantastic. They should be in all stealth games.
Agreed. So we've been talking about The Swindle. Now, I know it's available for the PS4. Is that what you played it on?
I've been playing it on the PC, but it's also available on the PS4. I think also on the Mac and Linux and what have you. I got it through Steam. It is... It's a romp. It's fantastic. I would recommend it to anyone who's interested in, you know, cracking into weird robot-filled Victorian mansions and stealing loot from safes.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that, Lee. That's The Swindle. And that's going to bring us to the conclusion of this week's episode of Zed Games. As usual, thanks very much for your company. Catch you guys next week.